Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the 2014 Fundraising Success Virtual Conference and Expo. Thanks so much for joining us today. I'm Margaret Battistelli-Gardner, Editor-in-Chief of Fundraising Success, and I'm pleased to welcome you to the conference and to our opening keynote session, Inspiring Innovation to Keep Your Fundraising Fire Burning. And yes, that is a mouthful, but it's a vitally important issue because we all know that complacency has no place in successful fundraising. But before we get started, let me take a second to point out the Tips for Attendees widget on your console. It's the blue one with the wrench on it. If you missed the Tech Tips video we played leading up to the session, you can always click this widget for more information. And also, we do hope you enjoy the session so much that you'd like to share it with your colleagues. And if so, the hashtag for the conference is SFV14. Also, as you know, attending all of the sessions in today's conference is applicable for 3.5 points in the education category of the CFRE International Application for Initial Certification or Recertification. Talk about a mouthful. You can find the documentation necessary to track the credits that you've earned during the show in the Resource Center, the information booth, and via a link in a post-event email. But if you have any questions, please email virtualshowinfo@napco.com. Okay, so let's meet our fabulous keynote speaker. Robin Mendez has been raising money to help make the world a better place for 13 years. Currently, she is making cancer history as the Senior Director of Development at the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center in Houston. In this role, she's responsible for the annual fund direct mail program, digital fundraising program, and philanthropic calling program. And today, she's here to share some ideas on keeping your team and your organization fired up about fundraising. I encourage you to ask questions throughout the session, and if time allows, we'll get to them at the end. But if you don't get your questions answered, no worries. Look for the answers in an upcoming issue of Today in Fundraising, which is our free daily e-newsletter. You can subscribe to it at fundraisingsuccessmag.com. Okay, Robin, welcome, and let's turn it over to you.
Thank you so much, Margaret. For that introduction, and also for inviting me to come and speak to you guys today. I'm really, really excited about it. As Margaret mentioned, I've been in the fundraising space since about 2002, and I'm currently working with MD Anderson Cancer Center. Previously in my career, I've spent time with both Blackbaud and Convio, as well as with the Houston affiliate of Susan G. Komen for the Cure, and the National MS Society's Lone Star Chapter. So I'm a Houston native and a native-born Texan, and so if you hear my southern twang come out in the middle of the presentation, just know that's what's going on. So now I'm going to talk to you a little bit about myself. Why don't I tell you a little bit about MD Anderson and what we're doing. So MD Anderson is headquartered in Houston, Texas. We have been ranked number one by U.S. News and World Report for 10 out of the last 12 years. We are also home to the nation's largest clinical trial program specifically focused on cancer. Last year, we enrolled a little over 7,600 people in clinical trials. So it's a really exciting place to work. Walking the halls, you can see doctors curing people of cancer. So I'm very excited to talk to you a little today about how innovation is important not only to fundraisers but also in the cancer space. So I thought we'd start out today by a little level setting. What is innovation? So very simply put, innovation is a new idea or device or a program. And, you know, when I think about innovation, it's also about just creative problem solving. So how are we meeting the needs of the constituents who we serve? How are we making the world a better place? So I also like to think of innovation as a way of connecting dots. So in our minds, we have all of these different ideas and all of these different experiences. If you think of each one of those individual ideas as being a specific dot, then the idea of innovation is connecting those dots so that they all make a logical circle to create an idea that you can make reality. The cancer business, why is innovation important? I think it's probably pretty clear. With cancer, we're trying to find a cure. So it's a matter of working both in the lab and also in the hospital to first develop innovative treatments and then to work through the process of taking those innovative treatments to the bedside. What's exciting about this is that, you know, we're not just looking for cures for cancer. We're also trying to help improve the quality of life for those who've been diagnosed with cancer. So if you or a loved one have ever had an experience with cancer, you know both radiation and chemotherapy can be very challenging experiences for human beings. And so part of what our mission is to make that experience better, in that we're improving the quality of life for those who are experiencing cancer and who are living with that disease. So why is innovation important for us as fundraisers? As fundraisers, it's even more critical that we are taking an innovative stance. But I don't see our innovation as any less critical than the innovation that's being done by our cancer researchers and our doctors. As fundraisers, our job is to help develop the funds so that we can make a path to make this world a better place. What that means is that we're responsible for keeping stories interesting, for keeping the work that our organizations are doing meaningful, so that we are able to motivate those who are about to become supporters to spark that first gift with them, or to inspire future giving. If they've made that first gift, what are we doing next to make them come back and give a second, third, or fourth gift? What are we doing to help prompt them to maybe make a more significant gift, either by including us in their will or by making an outright major gift? Additionally, beyond just the idea of giving, it's also about how are we thinking about the day-to-day work that we do as fundraisers. So we're either lowering costs for us to do the work that we do day in and day out, or so that we're thinking about how can we invest the funds that we fundraise in the most effective way to further our mission of our organization. So while innovation is super important in saving the lives of people with cancer, I just want to reiterate that the work we do as fundraisers is also critical in just making the world a better place and furthering the missions of what we're doing in a day-in and day-out basis. All right, so now that we've talked a little bit about what is innovation, and why is innovation so critical to the work that we're doing? I want to spend the rest of the time today going into what is holding us back as nonprofits and as fundraisers from being innovative in our day-to-day lives. So I'm going to ask a little question. What do you believe is holding your nonprofit back from innovating? So if you can, take a moment and click the box. We'll look at the results in about 10 to 15 seconds. So I'll give you guys a moment. All right. So really interesting. According to folks who are on conference today, you feel like budget constraints are some of the most significant things holding you back. I also see staffing issues is coming up as one of our top answers. So I think this gives us a good window. It seems like the group is pretty well unified that staffing issues, budget constraints are probably the two largest things that we're having to tackle. Fortunately, we're going to be talking about both of those issues during today's call. You know, in my opinion, as I've been working with nonprofits over the last year, one of the big key things is that's holding us back from being able to be truly innovative is this idea of having an open culture and a culture that's trusting and allowing for big ideas to surface, one. Secondly, being able to kind of take that big idea and take it across the finish line and actually make it reality. So I love this cartoon by Tom Fishburne. If you're ever looking for a good funny, business-related funny, I highly suggest you check out his website. What you see here is a group of folks who has just experienced executing a good innovative idea. And they're all complaining about, oh my gosh, this is so much work. We push too many boundaries. I learned my lesson in this. I'm never going to do it again. So, you know, I think it's a humorous way of looking at how are we as nonprofits and as managers of fundraisers moving to create a culture that is open to listening to new ideas, but two, is opening to executing those ideas. So a couple of tips that I wanted to share in terms of creating an open culture. First, I want to start out by saying that this is not an easy thing, and this is not something that happens overnight. You know, you have to start working on this as an individual and as a manager, and you have to work consciously to create this type of a culture if it doesn't already exist within your nonprofit? So, what does it mean to have an open culture, or a culture of open? First, it's making your making folks who work within your organization feel safe so that as a manager, your employees feel comfortable bringing any idea to you, whether it's an idea related to a challenge that they're facing or whether it's an innovative idea related to how they can further your fundraising mission. Additionally, it's that they're being valued. So it's this concept of everyone within the institution, regardless of their role, regardless of what they're doing, they are valued as individuals, but they're also the ideas that they come up with are valuable. So part of this is when employees bring ideas to you or when you guys are working together in teams, that the first response whenever you hear an idea is, okay, yes, maybe we could make that happen. I'm not suggesting necessarily that you should say yes to every innovative idea that might surface at the table. But what I am suggesting is that when a person or when an idea is created, that the team as a whole open to saying, okay, maybe this is a good possibility, before they immediately start dissecting it and saying no. I also want to talk, this also goes into kind of failure management. So when problems are discussed openly and you've developed solutions, your solution isn't always going to work. And sometimes that is very difficult for nonprofits to understand. I think part of that's related to the culture of the nonprofit system that we live in. We are highly scrutinized by watchdog groups, by the media, by all different types of outside organizations. They watch what we do. They watch how we spend our money. We're ranked based on how we spend our money and what percentages go to what programs within our institution. So naturally, as nonprofits, we're averse to any kind of risk or any kind of opportunity for failure. So that contributes to making it more difficult for us to develop an open culture. But you as a manager, you know, just some quick tips. You know, when your team is together, be the first one to say yes when ideas come to the table. When you're talking about an idea, talk up front about, okay, what are the risks associated with this idea? And what are the consequences of the potential failure? You know, sometimes the consequences are minor, that, hey, we're going to try this fundraising program. It doesn't cost very much. So if it fails, it's not a big deal for us. Some things might have a heavier price tag with them, and so failure is a much bigger problem that you're going to have to deal with. But I think having an open conversation and realizing that an important piece of creating an innovative culture within your institution is also creating a system that allows people, not that it's okay to fail, but that when things don't go as expected, it's not going to be the end of the world. You're not going to lose your job necessarily. So I'd like to give an example, kind of as we're talking about failure management, because we work in the cancer space. We do lots and lots of clinical trials. I mentioned this earlier in the presentation. And with clinical trials, you don't always get a cure at the end, and we oftentimes invest years and thousands of dollars in just testing out an idea to see if it might be the next amazing cure for cancer. So, you know, put in perspective the type of testing that your team is doing, and be willing to take some risk, understanding that the consequence of taking risk could be that it doesn't turn out quite the way that you expect it to. All right, next I'd like to talk to you about how you're working within your team. So working in teams is an interesting dynamic, and it also contributes to the open culture that we were just discussing and creating this trusting environment. So when you think in your mind, what does a creative person look like? We recently went out to RFP to do some web design work, and we had all of these creative directors from all these agencies in the area come by. It was amazing to me. I saw lots of guys in skinny jeans with cool hipster glasses and Movember-style facial hair, so the big handlebar mustaches and the cool beards. In my mind's eye, that is kind of the quintessential creative director stereotype. But what I want to challenge you to do today is ignore the stereotypes that you have in your minds about what it means to be creative and what it means to be a problem solver. So diversity breeds innovation. Having different people at the table to solve problems will give you more options to choose from whenever you're trying to make a solution. It's also important when you think about hiring and bolstering your staff, because you want people who think differently and you want people who come from different backgrounds. And this isn't just about race. This is about age. This is about background. This is about experience. So if you think about having a moment in time where you want to bring a group of people together to develop a solution or to develop a creative idea, the more diversity that you have at the table, the more ideas that those people will be able to submit. I mentioned earlier in the presentation when we were defining innovation that innovation in part is a series of connecting dots and connecting ideas. So when you have folks who have a different level of experience sitting at the table, then those folks have a different series of dots that you can cumulatively connect together. So I also want to point out, when we talk about hiring, there is a personality type that naturally is very good at being innovative and naturally very good at creative problem solving. We all know, and many of you probably participated in taking a Myers-Briggs survey, or maybe you've participated in StrengthsFinder. So there are individuals who this comes more naturally to them. However, this is something that is innate in all human beings. So anybody who's willing to have an open conversation can participate in these types of creative sessions. So I want to take a moment. When we're talking about diversity and bringing different types of personalities to the table, I want to talk to you specifically about introverts. I will say up front that I am an extrovert. I love to talk. I love to whiteboard and draw pictures. It's what comes naturally to my personal creative process. But there are people who have good, strong ideas that don't think in that way, and they don't find themselves comfortable in situations where they're being put on the spot to come up with a great idea. So I would like to encourage you, especially if you're a manager or if you're a team leader, when you're working with your diverse team, you will find your introverts. I have an introvert on my staff, and I found that she actually is one of the most creative individuals that works with us. But if I put her in a room and we have a quote-unquote brainstorming session, she shuts down and doesn't want to speak. So what I do to prepare her, she likes to have time to think through what she's going to say. She also likes to have time to document her ideas on paper. It helps her so that when we land in that brainstorming meeting, she's already been armed with the information she feels comfortable with to speak to the larger group. So what I would encourage you to do, if you are, while you can always plan spontaneous brainstorming sessions, if you are planning specific brainstorming sessions or you know you have a meeting coming up where you want to do some creative thinking, let your introverts know in advance. Try not to surprise them. Give them an opportunity to think through what they want to say and how they may want to contribute to the conversation, so that when they find themselves in the room and the extroverts are talking very loudly and very animatedly, they feel comfortable bringing their ideas to the table. All right. I also want to challenge you guys to expand your idea of team. When you think of team, you probably think of it 2 or 3, 4 or 5, 20 staff members, depending upon the size of your organization, or that are part of the group, the working group that you're working on. All the amazingness of the Ice Bucket Challenge happened over the summer. What I think is so amazing and so cool about the Ice Bucket Challenge is that the people who started it in honor of the gentleman that you see here in my slide. His name is Pete Freites. You know, they were just regular people. You know, Pete loved sports. He played ball in college. He had a lot of friends that loved sports. And when I think about the situation, I'm like, you know, that could be my husband. He loves sports. Now, he may not have played in college, but he has a passion for sports. And the instigation of the Ice Bucket Challenge came from one of his buddies who just wanted to do something. He felt powerless. and they wanted to do something to recognize and honor his friend and try to get others to do the same thing. So what I find, aside from just the amazing funds that were raised by this group, what I find so amazing and inspiring is that none of these folks were on staff at the Alzheimer's, or excuse me, at the ALS Foundation. They were just people who felt passionate about finding a cure for Lou Gehrig's disease. So my challenge to you, and why I talk about explaining the definition of team, is that you need to be thinking about brainstorming, and you need to be thinking about innovative ideas in a way that's larger than just the institutional boundaries of your organization. So whether that's staff, whether that's volunteers, whether that's empowered fundraisers or people who are close to your organization, you should be thinking about how can I give folks who don't necessarily work here an outlet to do creative fundraising. Peer-to-peer and third-party fundraising is becoming more and more popular. Crowdfunding is becoming more and more popular. You know, many of these types of programs, you can get software and basically set it up and do minimal support for that. And so I would encourage you guys, as you're kind of thinking through your larger fundraising plan, think about how you can engage those who may not be on staff to assist you with doing some big fundraising. So another tip that I wanted to put out is proactively seek out inspiration. And when I say seek out inspiration, it kind of takes two different forms. One is consciously give yourself and give your staff time away from whatever it is that they do on a day-to-day basis to gain inspiration. This doesn't have to be super time intensive. It doesn't have to be super duper expensive. At MD Anderson, we have a team who is composed primarily of folks who work in the IT department, as well as web developers who work in the web space. These folks go out into the hospital. They're required as part of their overall employment review, annual review, they're required to spend 1 hour a month inside the hospital. For them, it's a really great opportunity. People who typically sit behind the desk, who are not necessarily engaging with our patients or seeing what happens in the day-to-day life of the hospital, are required as part of their career success to spend time in the hospital seeing our patients, talking to our patients, helping them find their way when they're in the hospital. It helps them do their jobs better. Encouraging them to volunteer. When I worked for the National MS Society, one of the requirements that we had as fundraisers is that we had to volunteer to support our program staff when they had events or functions going on. Again, it puts you on the front lines of what's happening with your cause. It puts you on the front lines of what's happening and what's being experienced by either the people that you support or the people who care the most passionately about the causes that you're trying to further. So I encourage you strongly to seek out inspiration. But inspiration doesn't always have to come from being inside of your institution or engaging with activities inside your institution. It also comes from engaging and being involved with other fundraising professionals. So I know all of you think that that's a priority right now because you happen to be on this call and you happen to be participating in the virtual show this day. So, you know, don't just think of this as gathering information and gathering inspiration from your own institution. It's also gathering inspiration from those people who are doing work similar to the work that you're doing, whether that's attending a seminar or attending a conference, or whether that's, you know, checking out what the competition is doing. I, as Margaret mentioned earlier, I run the team who oversees all of our online fundraising, all of our email communications related to fundraising, all of our direct mail, and some of our calling programs. And I know exactly what's going on with Memorial Sloan Kettering, and I get their emails and I read them to get ideas and to get inspiration about what could I be doing better, what are they doing, what seems to be working for them. I also like to creep and watch the folks at the Mayo Clinic as well as Texas Children's. I also troll my mailbox for any direct mail solicitations that I might have gotten that are cool. Some of those come from other nonprofit organizations. Some of those come from, you know, the commercial space. So maybe it's an advertisement from a car dealership. Locally, they do some really cool direct mail, and we've gotten some good information and some good ideas based on what we're seeing in both the for-profit and nonprofit space. So, again, it's two-pronged. One is it must be intentional. Two is you must be getting out and getting away from the day-to-day minutia of what you're doing in your job. So I want to tell another story about inspiration. The gentleman you're looking at here is Dr. James Allison. He is one of the rock stars at MD Anderson. Some folks call him the father of immunology. He is responsible for, he started early on in his career studying the immune system and how the immune system works. While studying the immune system, had a life issue where two folks within his immediate family were diagnosed with cancer. And he watched these people go through chemotherapy, go through radiation, and it planted two spots in his mind. One was, wow, cancer can be really challenging. Secondly, he was already doing this cool research related to the immune system. His idea was, what if I could use the body's own immune system to start fighting cancer so that people don't have to go through the type of chemotherapy and radiation treatments that are currently offered to folks who are battling cancer? And so the idea here is, inspiration can come from anywhere. You know, this man happened to develop an amazing cure that could potentially revolutionize the way that cancer is treated. Now, we're still in the clinical trial phase, but early sights into this are very, very exciting. If you're interested in immunology, or if you want to learn more about the details of how immunology works and how the immune system can be unleashed to fight and battle cancer, check out, there's a brand new article in the Wall Street Journal highlighting Dr. Allison's work, as well as the work that's being done at some of the other premier cancer institutions across the country, including my folks at Sloan Kettering. So the idea behind inspiration is, when you're out and about, you have a larger frame of reference so that when you're asked to sit down and come up with creative ideas, you can draw upon all of these experiences. They become, if you will, additional dots that you can connect to one another in order to make a larger picture that might be the next huge ice bucket challenge for your organization. All right. The next topic that I'd like to talk about is, you know, when we talk about innovation and when we talk about, you know, being creative, a lot of times people get hung up by the idea of, my innovation has to be super new. And what I'd like to challenge you with today is that the idea of being new is a relative term, that ideas are constantly evolving, and that what was new to one organization this summer might be something totally different for you this winter. So I'm going to talk about MD Anderson's digital fundraising campaign as a specific example of this. So when I joined MD Anderson a little under 2 years ago, we had never sent out an email solicitation. We had never, we had a very low-tech, old-school donation form with multiple steps. We had not really done anything interesting or cool around how to promote beyond just email and having a donation form online. So for us at MD Anderson, the innovative idea was to get a system in place where we could send out emails. The innovative idea for us was to revamp our donation form. And while we are not, like, super innovative things, these are not things that are new to the nonprofit space, this is something that's pretty standard, these were the things that were innovative for us as an institution. So when we made the decision that we wanted to become more sophisticated in the digital fundraising space, you know, first thing we did was we sought out a good partner. We partnered with an agency with good minds that really helped us take a new perspective on what we had been seeing. They helped us to create a documented audit of what were the assets that we had at our disposal. They also helped us to identify those opportunities where we could improve what we had. As a result of that audit and as a result of that documentation, we identified, okay, we need to shorten the number of steps in order to get through our donation form. We need to make that experience more visual and more engaging. And so we did that. We found a patient. We found we limited the number of steps. We brought the form down from 4 pages to 1 page. We also started developing email campaigns to drive at least our existing constituent base towards that donation form. And we learned a lot. So I mentioned earlier in the conversation related to managing failure, we learned a lot. There were fields that were not on that form that our gift operations team desperately needed to be on that form in order to do their jobs. We also learned that there were steps when we shortened and simplified the form that actually made it more difficult for people to give the way that they wanted to give. So while I wouldn't necessarily classify those things as failures, they were definitely lessons learned that allowed us to then go back and modify the form a second time. So what was super exciting is that what we saw is as a result of promoting the form in a better way, making it more user-friendly, which took 2 different revisions, we saw an increased conversion rate of people making gifts and our online donation form by more than 400%, which is pretty phenomenal. We knew that we needed to take steps, but these steps weren't necessarily new. You know, when you look at other folks who are engaged in online fundraising, you know, they're doing much, much, much more than that. But for MD Anderson, those were the innovative ideas and the innovative steps that we needed in order to move forward. The last topic that I want to chat with you guys about is related to managing up. Because, you know, as middle and upper managers in your organization, everyone has a boss, whether that's the CEO of your organization or whether that's the board of directors. So my first piece of advice is that managing up is super critical, not only in being innovative, but in opening the culture of your institution. Again, as I mentioned earlier, this is not a an easy task. And if your boss is on board with kind of transforming the way that your group is thinking and your group is working together, they're going to be very critical, because if their response is no to everything, then it doesn't matter how awesome or creative your team is if it stops at your boss's desk, which is why I love this cartoon. Again, this is from Tom Fishburne. You'll see, brilliant idea. Now we just need you to run it up the management chain, and you see the chain of command with all of their different tools to beat down and cut the idea, and ending at the top with the executioner with his little axe. I just think that's hilarious. And I see this type of scenario play out so frequently with organizations that I've worked with today and in the past. Working with your bosses is super critical to getting these ideas executed. We identified earlier in the presentation that many of you feel like budget is what's preventing you from being able to be innovative. If you have the buy-in from your boss up front, then maybe it's going to take a 6-month or a year-long cycle in order to build it into the budget. But if you have a good idea that's going to hopefully take your group to the next level, it should be something that you've been working with your boss, where you may be able to get it into the budget where that would not have been possible historically. So some tips on how to get your boss on board. First is be transparent. Make sure they know what's going on. Make sure they understand the problem that you're trying to solve, or that they understand the idea that you're trying to translate. My second piece of advice is connect that idea directly to the goals and objectives of your supervisor, or to the goals or objectives of the person that you're reporting up to. You know, I work in a major in a development office that was built upon a solid major gift program. Everything we do is to drive major gifts and to drive planned giving. So when I talk about the programs that are important to me as a kind of mass marketing style fundraiser, I connect those ideas back to the number of new individuals that will be connecting with our institution, which as a result we can send through the fundraising research to identify some new potential major gift prospects. So tying all of this together is super important. If your ideas are helping your boss further their personal goals and missions, then they are more likely to allocate budget. They are more likely to assist you with getting through whatever challenges that you might face in executing that. I think this kind of goes hand in hand with being transparent. You want to talk openly and directly about the risk and the potential for failure. If your boss knows up front that you are being cautious, and that you're thinking through these things, they're going to feel more comfortable when issues arrive because you're not blind to them and because you're not trying to hide them when they're coming up. So like you can imagine in your own life, you don't like surprises. I don't like surprises, especially negative ones. I got an unpleasant surprise this morning as I was driving into the office for this presentation. I got a flat tire. Unpleasant surprise. It totally threw me for a loop and kind of shook me for a moment. But the nice thing about surprises is that you can then plan for them. So if you're thinking in advance and you're like, oh, I might get a flat tire on the way to work, then you can plan for that in a way where, oh, fortunately my father lives close to me and was able to pick me up and I'm able to do this conference today with you guys from my home because I had planned in advance. Now, I did not plan in advance for a flat tire. But it's just an example of people don't like when negative surprises pop up. If you are planning for those and if you're working with your boss and keeping him in the loop of those, it will help clear the path for you when future projects come up. Also, provide reports, progress reports, whether that's on, hey, this is happening or that's happening, or whether that's a report on your numbers. Also, report back on lessons learned. So, as the example I gave earlier, you know, we were talking about the donation form and how we needed to modify it. This was a lesson we learned. We needed to make some tweaks in order to make it better, and that was something we were able to do because the team was working transparently with one another. We identified it as an immediate problem, and we were able to immediately address it. So that is what I have to talk about today. Margaret, have we gotten any questions over the chat line that you'd like to chat to talk through?
Well, we do have a really interesting question. We only have a few minutes left, but obviously if our attendees are here, they're feeling, you know, maybe they're lacking some inspiration or they want to avoid getting to that point where inspiration is dragging. But what would you say are the signs that within an organization or within the fundraising department that are telling people, okay, we really need to get inspired here? Sounds obvious, but maybe there are some subtle things that folks are experiencing that you could speak to.
So I always first point to, if you see your fundraising stagnating, or if you are doing the exact same thing this year that you did last year, that you did the year before, I think both of those are indicators that there might be some opportunity to do some innovative thinking. The fundraising field is moving very, very quickly right now, and there's a lot of change happening. Technology is disrupting directly the way that we do work. Social media is disrupting the way that we do work and the way that we engage with the folks who care about our causes. So, you know, if you and your institution find that, yeah, we're not raising a whole lot more than we did last year, and we're not really doing anything different than we did last year, then I think there's definitely an opportunity to kind of lift your head up from your day-to-day work and say, wow, what are others doing? What should we be thinking about? Does that help answer that question, Margaret?
Yeah, I think that makes perfect sense. And just one more very quickly. If your organization is floundering as far as, would it be foundering? I'm not sure. But if it is stuck in a rut and, you know, you're beginning to realize that, how quickly does that start to affect the quality of your fundraising. I mean, can you wallow for years and not see a downward spiral, or is it something that shows up fairly quickly?
I think it depends on the size of your organization and the type of consistency that are giving to you, whether that impacting your bottom line or not. We know that long term, some people, you know, it could be within a year or two. Some people, it could be, you know, several years. So I don't necessarily think there's a specific time frame where you might see that impact on your bottom line. However, you know, if you're working in an office and you've been working in that office, you feel the energy level. And you know, are we doing the next big thing, or are we just kind of in cruise control mode? And sometimes, you know, sometimes it's just getting your group off-site to just address it in a very confronting kind of way. Like, hey, guys, as your leader, I feel like we might be getting a little stagnant. What do you think? What would you like to do to make it not stagnant? Or what could we do to kind of take our group to the next level?
Okay, well, you know, I went and asked you a question and didn't really give you enough time to really expand on it, and I apologize for that. But I think that was some great information that you got in there at the end. Anyway, we are out of time. And, Robin, I think you're going to head over to the networking lounge. Is that correct? So if anyone wants to chat with Robin or some other folks, other attendees, head over to the networking lounge. They'll be there for a while until the next session. And on behalf of Fundraising Success, I want to thank you, Robin, for presenting, and I want to thank all of our attendees for being here with us this morning. And again, I encourage you to visit the networking lounge. Please also visit the information booth and fill out our show survey to let us know about your experience today. And remember, if you miss anything today, the entire show will be archived, and the on-demand environment will be available for 3 months starting on Monday. Have a great day, everyone, and I hope to see you all at some other sessions. Thank you.